back to the Cattle Menu podcast. I'm Caroline Rose, the founder and CEO of K Rose Company and Cattle Menu. Thank you for joining us on this episode. I'm excited to bring you these conversations each week filled with relatable advice and techniques you can take back to your operation. It's my mission to make sure that we can ranch in the next generation. Make sure and subscribe where you're listening so you never miss a new episode. Welcome to the Cattleman U podcast. I'm your host, Caroline Rose, and I am here with Brian today. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Why don't you start and just give us a little bit about your background and kind of how you're involved in the agriculture world?
Right now, not too much, but I was raised on family's ranch in Salinas, California, and always around horses and cattle, sheep. Now, what I do is work with horses and help people with their horses. Not so much stockmanship. That was for many years a big part of my life.
Why don't you define stockmanship?
Define it. Okay, I wondered that, you know. So I think back in my life of a few friends that I have that were excellent stockmen. Now, that's not a word that we ever use. And when I ask them, do you use stockmanship? They're like, what's stockmanship? And they're just good cowboys. So I think that if you think about horsemanship or dogmanship, what you're looking for is maximum results with minimum effort. That means efficiency. And pretty much what stockmanship is. I mean, I would judge people as stockmen that were the most efficient. Basically, what you're doing with stock is the same you're doing with a dog or horse, or I would want to, is discourage thoughts and actions you don't want and encourage thoughts and actions you do want to handle stock most efficiently.
And so then when you talk about horsemanship, how does horsemanship differ from stockmanship?
Can't see it, except for the horse looks a little different than a cow, and you don't usually ride a cow. And about the same, you're not doing as much with a cow as you would with a horse, but it's all about the same. Encouraging thoughts and actions you want and discouraging the ones you don't want. About that easy.
Why do you think that we need stockmanship in modern times in the farms and ranches that we have?
So you can alter the behavior of livestock to do anything with them. Load them or put them in the chute or move them from pasture to pasture or sorting. I mean, it wouldn't be just modern. I mean, people been doing this as long as there was cows to be handled. And there's bad stockmanship and there's good stockmanship. Normally, like when I told my friends about this, they're like, stockman, you know, and nobody, we just don't use that term. But I think about it as a good hand or a sorry hand. That's what it amounts to.
This is going to be a long answer, but how do you become a good stockman?
Oh, well, by making mistakes. By finding out what doesn't work. And so my family had that ranch, and we'd go to the mountains every year with the cows. I didn't know it, but we didn't have good handling cattle. I didn't know it because I had nothing to compare it with. I thought that's the way all cows work. And we botched a lot of gathers, lots of trees and steep country and brush. Once the cows get in that country, it's over. You can't overtake them in the trees. It's too thick and steep. So we kind of learned to be smarter about it, make a plan. And our cows would break and run for the trees when they saw us. And then they get relief for doing something we don't want them to do. We want them to get relief for something we do want them to do. Really, a good stockmanship would be where the cattle you're handling get a little easier and better to handle every time. The same as horsemanship. I would think every time you ride your horse, you'd want him to be a little better, and the same with your dog.
So how do you get started? If you want to be a good stockman, maybe how do you assess your current stockmanship, and then how do you
well,
get
that's
started?
That's how I got started, and then I ended up, well, I didn't know anything else, so I went to work for people. That's what I wanted to be as a cowboy. And like I said, I never heard the term hardly stockmanship, but by making mistakes and figuring out how not to make them again. So can I tell you some examples?
Absolutely. Please do.
And then I've never done anything else with my life until lately. I'm focusing just on the horses and the dogs. But my family has a ranch in Montana. My grandparents on my dad's side. And my uncle was running that, and a very good stockman, if you want to call it, very good. And when I was about 15, 16, I went up there and spent the summer with him, and probably 16, because I had a driver's license, I believe. Or I might not have quite had one. Maybe my dad run me up there. Anyway, it doesn't matter. But he says, I'm going to put you in charge of the cattle this summer. I'm going to go work on the hay crew. And I wanted to do a good job because I wanted to be a cowboy. I already decided that quite a long time before that. One time something happened. We were scattering bulls, I had a specific bull I want to put with these cows. And I had to pull a very steep hill where they were jumping up. You'd need to jump up the rim rock to get up this hill. And I tried to make it happen, kid fashion. I had quite a few dogs with me and trying to make the bull move. And I was failing bad. I didn't want to go home and fail. I wanted him to stay on the hay deal. Anyway, he said, let's go back up there after supper. And days were long. We went up there and I had 4 or 5 dogs, and I got the dogs out. The bull was pretty much where I left him, only he was laying down, he's cut, and I kind of had him on the fight where he was shoving my horse around. And so as soon as I called the dogs out, my uncle said, nope, load your dogs back up. They were his dogs, but I was using them. And look, we don't need dogs for this. As soon as we started to move the bull and it looked away, he don't stop your horse. You can see he's going in the direction we want. Don't push on him. And he was asking for way less than I was. And we just took that bull right up the mountain. We'd let him go 10, it was steep, so 10, 15, 20 feet. And if he'd want to stop, just hold up. Don't push him here. He wants to get his air. Let's let him get his air. Start again. And I mean, he was jumping rimrock before we were done. I thought, this is so stupidly simple. I can't believe it. I was trying to make the bull do it. That was a big lesson for me. One time I was a cow boss for a crew on a big ranch in Nevada. One of the guys on the crew, when we were done gathering this rough country, I asked anybody, did you leave anything? And one guy said, there was one that's knuckled over. What I mean by that, stepping on the, he wasn't using his hoofs. He was stepping on the backs of his, or the front of his hoof, and he couldn't hardly go. He said, I should have cut his throat, and probably he'll die right where he's at. So I said, where's he at? If you're thinking about getting him, I'll just tell you, this was a guy that I took over for a cowboy job on the ranch, and you're not going to get it. But I'll tell you, maybe you want to go up there and cut his throat. And of course, I remembered what my uncle taught me when I was just in high school. And I took that steer right down through the boulders and trees. But he was even in worse shape than the bull. When he needed a rest, I gave him a rest. He was ready to fight me. What I first did when I walked up there, I had a few baseball-sized rocks in my pocket and I kind of hollered at him and beamed him right in the nose, and then just got clear away from him just to let him know that I could mean business, and then let him. And so when I started down the second time, he turned away from me and I went the other direction. I was getting relief for trying to yield, and I took him quite a ways where I had a trailer parked and loaded him in the trailer. When I got home, everybody was eating. The rest of the crew was all eating. And I just sat down and started eating. And he said, well, did you find him? And I said, I did. And he said, so did you cut his throat? And I said, no. And so where'd you last see him? I said, in my trailer, but I wanted to eat before I unloaded him. And so I didn't try to explain to him what I did, but that has come in handy so many times. And I had a neighbor, Bill Dorrance, and a brother of his, and he told me, he was my neighbors above us where I grew up. They had some lease cows. They would have had these cattle a lot broker if they nicer to handle. My wife tells me broker's not a word, but if they had belonged to him, but he took what he had. Well, there was a cow when they started to move them that would just leave the bunch and take off. So Bill was all for roping her. That's what a lot of guys do when they want to teach one a lesson. But Jim said, instead of roping her, why don't we, if she comes out on your side, take her for a trip. That means just lope her out. They were in a pretty open place where there was no trees where she could get away. You tip her back into the bunch. If she goes in the bunch and out on my side, I'll take her for a trip. And if she comes out on your side, you take her for a trip. And they'd let her rest whenever she got in the bunch. And they did that for a while and let her rest up good. And Bill said the rest of the time, if she would ever get in the lead, she's going faster, faster. He said, I'd try to cut her off and take her for a trip. She'd duck back into the herd and she never bothered him again. So one time we had one allotment, we had about 4,000 head of steers in, and it took several days to gather them. And there was, at the end of every day, I'd ask different cowboys, what'd you leave? Did you, anything that you left back? Open country, no trees, sagebrush country. And every gather, somebody'd say, boy, I ran into these two Branga steers. I just could not turn them. And I lost them. So I came in with what I had. And there was one cowboy that, pretty good hand, and he said, I paralleled those two black steers for maybe a mile. Didn't try to turn them, just paralleled them until they bent off of my horse. If you try to turn them, they just cut in behind your horse or split up, and then you're done. Anyway, we'd made some drives with these 4,000 steers every time we'd get a pretty good bunch. This was right down to the last, when these two black steers were probably the last ones that anybody knew about. And so I got them in. We got all our leftovers in a field, and until we could accumulate everything, clean the whole field. And I had never seen them yet, but I told the crew, I said, when we bunch these cattle, we had like 200 or something. When we bunch them, there's supposed to be two black ones. Everybody knew about these two black ones. They're going to be bad to hold. So I said, and this had no field, had no trees in it, or just sagebrush. And I said, if they come out, take them for a trip. Don't put them through the fence. Don't try to make them turn. Parallel them until they pull off. And we did that for a while. As soon as I rode into the herd, these two black ones came out of there like a lion, and away they go. And I said, I'm not leaving until these two know how to stay, because we had to go through a clean field. Clean means no cattle in it. So it was BLM country. They check on us, and it's important we don't lose any cattle on our trip taking these cattle where they needed to go. And so we did that, held them and let them rest in the herd. I got so I could ride in the herd, and they'd roll around me, stay in the herd, and never saw them again. We had to go, I don't know, 8 or 10 miles through this clean field. They were in the middle of the bunch the whole way, never saw them again. So that's, and then if you want another one, I've seen cattle that wanted to not stay in the herd, and I've seen cattle that didn't want to come out of the herd. So I was, same thing pretty much, only it was just the opposite. So one time me and another guy were, and he was not a good stockman, and we were cutting dries out, sorting dries out. And we had one big lot and a gate in the corner, and we'd take turns cutting them and sending them to that gate. And we had all our cuts out. There was one cow that didn't want to come out of the herd. So it was kind of our fault, but like we'd bring her out of the herd and she's dodging around back and forth. Instead of staying with her, there might be one or two dries on the fringes of the herd. We'd say, well, heck with her. Let her. We got these two right here. Let's go with them. And so she's getting rewarded for going back in the herd, just opposite what she'd need. So we got down to where she was the last one. I was holding the herd, and we were done. We had all our cuts out in this other lot, and he can't get her out. And he'd dodge around there, and she'd get back in the herd. Then he'd pull up and cuss her, and pretty soon he's cinching up tighter and getting his rope down. I said, well, hang on here. What are you thinking? Well, I'll drag the dirty thing out of there. And I'm like, so who's going to watch the gate while we're doing that? I mean, the great big old cow, both our horses together probably wouldn't weigh as much as she weighs. So we're done except for one cow. And can you try something for just a second? And he said, okay. He was all mad at her. I said, if she's in the heart of the herd, trot her around in there. Trot her around in the middle of the herd where she wants to be. If she gets on the fringes of the herd, just ride away and leave her. And we kept doing that for a while, where she got her relief, where she was prepared to leave the herd. And pretty soon her ears were up looking out. I made a lot of room for her. And I said, look, she's thinking about leaving. Just sit quiet. Sit quiet. And pretty soon she thought, I can do this. She was getting a little puffy being in the middle of the herd and around. We taught her to get on the fringes, and out she went. So much easier. So anyway, another thing happened one time. So I was on a big ranch in Nevada. Fairly big for me anyway. We had 10,000 head of steers, but in Nevada, it takes quite a bit of country to run 10,000 head of steers. So the manager to the outfit, he was kind of on a separate crew. I worked for the owner, but he had a crew and I had a crew. And we had this, they were trucking cattle in from Colorado. This fellow had a feedlot there. And he had a bunch of cattle come in the night before and in this lot where they were. So this lot was split by a canal. And the banks of this canal were straight down, like no cattle were going to go into the canal. And they had a bridge there across the canal. And he asked me if I could help with my crew to cross this bridge. Sure. So we met at a certain time, and he had a bunch of guys horseback, and they had their dogs, and there wasn't a good place. The canal was straight, so it wasn't a good place to funnel them into. These guys were screaming at themselves and their dogs and it was just crazy. And it was, see, when you scream, and there was a barn there, and I wasn't going to tell him, but when you're hollering at cattle that way, the echo comes off the barn or even a set of board corrals, and the cattle think the screaming could be coming from where you want to take them. And they had fits. It was terrible. And we finally got them. I mean, it took forever. Horses all sweated up and just a mess. And we finally got them. So I got in the pickup and went on with my work, and I apologized to my help that they had to go through something like this. So we had to bring 10,000 head of steers from Colorado to the ranch. So a few days later, he said, can you help us again? And I said, sure. I said, would you like to? You name it, whenever you're done with your stuff. I said, how about 11 o'clock? And he said, 11 it is. I'll be there at 11. Well, then I took my crew down there right then at 8 o'clock. And I thought, we'll get this done before all the help shows up. So on the way down there, a fellow working for me, a fellow friend of mine named Joe Walter, he said, you know, can we try something I heard about but never saw? Yes. Sounds good. So you're leading this deal. So there was a big bunch of them on both sides of the canal. And tell us what you want us to do. Okay, we just rode in there real soft. You see all these cattle that are sleeping in the back end? I mean, they just came from all the way from Colorado. Also want you to do is ride around there real soft and get them on their feet. He rode over to, he got his rope down, rode over to the fence, and there was a broken post. You could see where somebody had, it was a net and wire lock. So they used to have wooden posts in it, but you could see a broken post laying on the ground and where somebody had put in a steel post. Anyway, he put his loop around one of those broken posts, snugged it down, and started pulling it. Of course, those cattle are curious as could be. This is not a plan B type thing. This is not, this is, it needs to be plan A, because while they're curious, once you raced them around screaming at them and all the sicking dogs on them, I don't know if this would work, but they were all sleeping. And he started to drag that post, and a few steers saw that, and a few more, and he just rode across the bridge, and they followed it just like steers follow a porcupine across the meadow. And all we had to do was wake up the ones on the other end. The whole chain started coming. We were out of there. We put them in the corral, and we were out of there in probably 15 minutes. It took longer to unload our horses and put our bridles on than it did to do the whole job. We were gone. And so that was quite a deal. Years later, I gathered on the ranch 25,000 head of steers, and I gathered this country with a crew several times, this rough, deep, rocky country. And when it was all said and done, I was short four. And we hunted and hunted for tracks, and I never could find them. And I was down that country with a pickup. Here they were, four of them laying under an oak tree, just chewing their cud. And I thought, oh man, I know where they are. But by the time I get home, hook up a trailer, catch a horse, saddle, come down here, could be a while. So I thought about this deal that Joe did. And I went up, there was a holding field not too far away, quarter mile maybe. And I went up there and opened the gate. And then I came, went past the steers, and I'm looking for, there was a fallen down oak tree. I busted off a branch off this oak tree, and I happened to have an old wore out lasso branch, and I came by them, and they saw that branch dragging up the road, and I give them time to get on their feet and come, and they just were curious, and I led them right into the holding field, made a loop, shut the gate behind them. On that, if you drive too fast, they get disconnected from it. If you drive too slow, they're going to smell it and say, well, it's just an oak branch. I don't know why it's moving down the road, but it's nothing but an oak branch. So anyway, I've used that a few times, and I've thought many times that would have been a good plan A for a lot of times moving cattle, especially yearlings are super curious.
We are so excited to bring you Cattlemen U merch. This, our first merch drop, is centered around our mission of supporting the beef industry and the women in it. You can never have enough graphic tees or crew necks, whether you're out working cattle or in the field or running errands. You can grab the perfect piece to add to your closet now. Shop today at cattlemenulive.com/store.
And one time, another story if it's okay. Yeah, so I one time was with a guy, and there was a neighbor bull in with the cows. So that bull has been in everybody's cows in this whole valley. He knows how to do fences. So what do you want to do, Brian? Do you want to take the bull? We had to go quite a ways to go to some prowls to load him. Do you want to take the bull, or do you want to take the pickup? And of course, I would always take the, I needed to be his horseback as much as I could, riding young horses. So I'll take the bull. So the trailer happened to be between where we were and the gate to get out of the pasture after he got him out of the cows. And whoever the last person was to get out of the trailer left the back door open. So I'm going across this, heading for the gate. And I thought, he's not looking at the gate. He's looking at the trailer. And pretty soon both ears came up. And I said, he's going straight for that trailer. So I thought, if he's been in everybody's cows, he's probably been in everybody's trailer. And I kind of hit a little trot, and he went right in the trailer. And he was so gentle and committed to it that I just jumped off my horse and shut the divider inside there and then loaded my horse behind him. And I thought, well, you know, we teach horses to load in the trailer all the time. How about teaching bulls? Right after that, we had four Beefmaster bulls, yearlings, and I wanted to kind of work my horse in the evenings anyway, get ready for the fair. So, but I parked my trailer in the gate, open door on the trailer, so that if those bulls wanted to go in there, they could. So I just worked them. But if they went anywhere down there by the trailer, I just left them alone. I give them comfort down there, put them to work on that other end. It wasn't no time at all before, if they would look in the trailer, I would leave them alone. And of course, pretty soon they got to where they just load up. You know, when you're after cattle, especially something that's got a big foot or a bad eye or they're hurting somehow, they'll hunt somewhere to get relief. That's where they jump in a swamp or the willow patch or the jump in the lake or some way to get away from somebody. So I just fixed it so the trailer was where they could get away from me. And start with, when I rode up there, they'd want to come out. I just start in again. I wouldn't try to jump up there and slam the gate on their ribs or anything. They got, so when I went down there to work them, they'd be up lounging around, chewing their cud. They'd just go down there and get in the trailer. And I got them where I could ride up on the side of the trailer. If they unloaded, I'd just start again. And pretty soon they wouldn't leave the trailer, even with an open door. So then I had those bulls. I got them out of the corrals, and the snow melted off on the meadows, and I was feeding them cake. To start with, I drove right up to them and dumped cake out where they could see me. And I had a pup, border collie pup, and he'd never done anything much, but the bulls were wanting to come to the pickup anyway. So I would just ask them to do what they wanted to do anyway. I just, on a border collie, you want them to work opposite of you and bring stuff or turn stuff, or they're not really a drive dog. They're more of a herd dog, they call them. And so every day I started getting a little further away from those bulls, even to the extent there was a big kind of a hump in that field where I see them on one side of the hump, I would take my pickup on the other side, and where I couldn't see them and they couldn't see me. Then I'd send my dog, and it takes a little bit to get a pup to where he'll go where there's nothing he can see. But if I had to walk out there the first time or two, you know, I'd just aim, look, 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 get him excited, and then he'd take after the bulls, and I'd get to the pickup. Well, the bulls, every day they knew the dog was bringing them to cake, so there was no opposition. They're not going to fight him over that. And I got further and further, and I was kind of having fun with them. And my boss says, hey, I got a pasture over here 5 miles away or something. It'd be perfect for them bulls. Get them out of your hair. And I didn't want them out of my hair. I was having fun with them, but I didn't tell him that. So we'll dump them off there. So long about June, breeding time, hey, let's go get those bulls. So we see them way off the other end of this field. They're under a cottonwood tree chewing their cud. And he said, so what do you want to do? Do you want to take the pickup and trailer, or do you want to bring the bulls? I said, well, can we try something? These bulls, I hadn't even seen them for quite a while. They'd grown quite a bit. And I said, can we try something? Head and name it. So I said, when I got out to open the gate, I unchained my dog, and I was like, hey, look, 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 look. And he's looking for the bulls, and he sees them way down there under a cottonwood tree. And I give him the command to go. Kind of use universal, most everybody uses SIG, but anyway, away, away, and away he went. So he said, okay, what do you want me to do? Just pull this trailer in the field, and he'll be coming with them. And they already knew how to load in the trailer, and we unloaded our horses, and he was putting his bridle on, and you could hear boom, 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 bulls loading in the trailer. We just got the gate behind him, and he said, "Oh, you take the bulls. I'll lead your horse. You can take your bridle off, put your halter on." He never even put a foot in the stirrup, and we had him heading for home. So one other time I had a cow and a calf in the neighbors, and I had a ways to go. I had to ride a ways to get to her and find her, and I couldn't get my trailer very close. And so I got her sorted out, and I'm bringing her. I noticed the calf wasn't wanting to stay with his mother very good. And so on the way up there, I would let him leave his mother and then let my dogs bring him back. As soon as he got back toward his mother, my dogs ride off. So on the way up there, I was teaching him, you better stay with your mother. And it wasn't long before he was hugging her. A pair is way easier to handle than a cow and a calf. And when we got to the trailer, and I've done this plenty of times since, just lap her. Well, the last quarter mile or so, I made her travel at a good brisk trot so we could get a contrast going. And to start with, she was up there by the grill guard on the pickup, that was good enough. I'd just ride away from her. This is your refuge. And every time she left, I'd get a little more particular till she was in the door. She was looking for a place to hide. And you know the rest of the story. She loaded right up. If she wanted out, I didn't have two cattle. I had one pair. So the calf has already learned how to hug his mother. And I've just done a bunch of that since. And occasionally there's been a time when the terrain doesn't fit. For like if they get in the trees, it's over. I've been involved in this all my life where guys are hooked onto a bull trying to load it in the trailer and they get their hocks under the door and it's terrible. And so I learned this from loading those cattle in the trailer, but just catch them by one hind foot. Don't try to stop them, but just let them pull your horse. That's a lot of work. If they even swing their head and look toward the trailer, I'm popping my turns and going with them. And it isn't long before they're hunting a place to hide. And that works really good. That's way better than trying to drag one in by the neck and they choke in the door and you got to get them up and all the stuff that goes with that. And especially when you're by yourself and the bull outweighs your horse by 2-1, that catching them by the hind foot, you can make life miserable on them. And then as soon as they think trailer, just back off. And that's been a big help a lot of times too. So on the subject of running cattle through the chute, I have a friend that's a good stockman. He didn't know it till I told him the other day, but a good cowboy. He was telling me that anytime he was passing through where there was corrals, when he came there, he said they were just terrible to get in the chute. I mean, that's where they get branded and poked with needles and all that. And he said he just arranged it so that he just put them in the corrals and left all the gates open that go right up to the chute. And to start with, they kind of stayed in there quite a while, and pretty soon they found their way out, and it got to where when he stuck them in the corral, they're going right up the lane and right out. I did that with my cows quite a few times. I'd get them in to work dogs on them and then let them all out so they had to go through the chute. And there was a couple cows that I think they were in there for maybe 2 days. They weren't gonna trust the chute, but it got where my wife and I putting cattle through the chute, we really don't need anybody bringing them. They're just flowing right up. You might have to step back out of the way a little bit, but that's about it. Worked really good. Anyway, you mentioned about the helping other people about stockmanship. And I can remember my oldest son was not 4. And after lunch, I was kind of low-browed, and I was like, "Hey, what's the matter, Dad?" And I said, "I got problems." What's the matter? And I said, "I got this cowboy over here, and this cowboy over there, and this cowboy, and I need to move these cows, and I just need one more cowboy." And he said, how about me? And I said, "You're not busy? Like a 3-year-old has a big schedule, you know?" "No." I said, "Well, I don't have a problem." He had a good pony too, especially if I rode it the day before, which I just did. And it was a kind of a Mickey Mouse deal that you could go out there in a 4-wheeler with one dog. It would be plenty. And but to him, it was like a lonesome dove, you know. It was a big deal. So I try to get him thinking about a plan instead of just being a robot. So I said, "One of us needs to go up this ridge over here, and one of us needs to go on the flats. And I don't know which cowboy, whoever goes up the ridge has to open a wire gate." So he said, "I think you better go up on the ridge because I can't open a wire gate." Good thinking, real good thinking. So I see the cows going up the ridge, I mean, ahead of me. And I had to trot up there and open the gate. And starting to see him bringing them. But about half of the way up there, kids have tunnel vision, you know, and everybody that's green. And one cow just pulled off to graze. And he didn't see her, just flat, but he's not quite 4. And he just kept coming. Well, I thought I'd holler to him. And I thought, "That's okay. We got lots of time." So his cow started getting with mine. And when we got near the gate, I said, "Hey, we're doing pretty good, aren't we?" "Yeah." And I says, "You know how I know I did a good job? Know how? You know that ridge that I went up? I can look back, and all cows that were there are going through this gate. There's not even a cow back there." "Yeah, Dad. And you know how I know I did a good job?" And he turns around and all those. He said, "Dad, I'll be right back." I said, "Where are you going?" "I'll be right back." So instead of hollering, "You know, what are you doing? You know, don't leave cattle behind you and all that." And then when I'd get next to a gate, when he helped me after that, I'd say, "Boy, we sure are doing good." And he'd always spin around in the saddle and make sure there wasn't anything behind him. Anyway, so that was one example. One time I wanted him to think. And so one time I had my kids with me, several kids. My youngest one, I guess, was just getting born about that time. But a lot of times when I'm fixing fence or anything, I throw a bunch of cattle in a corner when it's handy. And just let my dogs kind of hold them and ride through them and get them gentle. And then when they look good, just ride away and leave them. Anyway, I had a bunch of yearlings there I was looking after. And I said, "You know, we need to go through these and see if there's any bad eyes or feet or anything like that." And so we threw them up. "You kids hold these cattle." I put my dogs back behind the kids. I thought, "This is good chance for them to learn to hold cattle." And there wasn't much there. It was mostly just for them. They didn't know that. But pretty soon they got to talking. And I see some of my herd drifting down the fence, but they're kind of busy talking. They don't notice it. And I thought, "I'll just let them go." And all at once I like sent my dogs, "Hold them, hold them, hold them." And it's like a crisis. And they're like, "What's the deal? What's the deal?" And let's get around these cattle and bring them back. I was done anyway, but they didn't know that. And I held them. And then I said, "Did those cattle take a run at you?" Because sometimes when those cattle run at you, the best cowboy in the world can't stop them. They'll split up and go on both sides. Don't you worry about it. Well, actually, they were in a dead walk. And they knew that they had falling asleep chatting. We put them back together. And, but I noticed without me saying anything, they were split up and they had their eyes on the cattle, not visiting. Anyway, those are some things. This Bill Dorrance, his family ranched in Oregon, and he said there was a guy in our community that was, really, really noted for being a stock handler. And he could do things by himself that crews couldn't do. And everybody knew the guy was really good hand. And Bill said he asked him about, "Where'd you learn this and all?" And he said, "If somebody came to work for me and they wanted to learn what I have learned, He said, I would let him come with me for the first year with no horse, on foot. And the next year, you can come with a horse, but no rope. You see, because a lot of people use a rope to make up for sorry cattle handling. I mean, you got to have a rope. You never know when you're going to pull something out of a ditch or doctor something. And I like to rope myself quite a bit, but it's very annoying when every time something breaks back, it's usually a high school kid that can't wait to get his rope on something that just leaves you and takes after something. And sometimes it can be very critical. And there you are with one less guy. And then he gets something caught, which he's so proud of. And we lose another guy that's got to go down there and heal him and get his rope off. And anyway, I could see why he'd say no rope. Anybody handling cattle is, failure is a big part of success. I'd like to allow my children the chance to screw up because then they learn what not to do. And my one person that I've worked with the most, that I respect the most, probably would be this Bill Dorrance or his brother Tom Dorrance. When I was with him, we started lots of horses, but we had to take care of a bunch of yearlings too. And we were talking about wrecks. And he said, your next responsibility after a wreck is a graceful recovery. And I thought, that is so true. Usually there are people trying to figure out who to blame it on and screaming and all that. And that's not the way I grew up. Everybody's going to make mistakes. I don't know how much time we have.
Go ahead, keep going.
When I was about 15 or 16, I can't remember how this happened, but these people that were working for a big feedlot needed a little help, only this wasn't on a feedlot. And I never had a job outside the place. And the leader of that bunch, he was a big heavy guy that smoked a cigar all the time and had that cigar, big fat cigar like a hot dog. And you couldn't hear him very good. I couldn't make out a lot of times what he'd say. And he said, "And you get in the lead of these cattle and let them in that pen over there." So I got up there and he come with the last of them. I turned them all in and he says, "So how many?" And I says, "Well, I never counted them. If I'd known you wanted them counted, I would have counted them. Let me tell you something, kid. Get this straight. If they move, you count them. Understand?" And I felt bad. And another thing, with that big fat cigar in his mouth, you couldn't make out half of what he said. So I watched him real close, and I didn't want to do any screwing up. And I would look between him and the job all the time. He knew I was watching him, and he could just put his hands up like, "Bring him on a little faster. Slow down a little bit, hold up right there." And I didn't care if I had that, he had that cigar in his mouth or not. But people working with you, they should be counting everything. Because when I had guys work for me, or if you start counting, if you're tapering the leaders down in the gate, and they shouldn't be a hoorah on them, the drag come through where nobody in the world could count them. One time, I'm having a flashback. I was on a ranch and we gathered this country, and we probably had about 3,000 head of steers or a little more coming home. We spent days gathering them. We were going to make a drive and bring them a little closer to home. There was a guy there in the lead, wanted me up there in the lead with him. And he said, you come up here and count them with me." The gate was pretty wide. And he said, "You get on one side, I'll get on the other." The way I count, I just learned this myself. I don't count by ones, because if there's a bunch of cattle, you don't have time to say one, two, three, four. And so I learned to count by threes. 3, 6, 9, and the next steer coming through, 10. 3, 6, 9, 20. 3, 6, 9, 30, like that. That's the easiest way I ever. And then when you come to 100, just pick up one coil on your rope and you can start all over again. 3, 6, 9, 10, 3, 6, 9, 20. So I've been counting quite a bit. Counting cattle is a little bit like roping, like, or riding a bicycle. The more you do it, the more accurate you can get. Anyway, so this guy was the manager for all outside cattle, range cattle, for a big feedlot. So when the last one went through, of course, I don't know, there was 8 or 10 cowboys right there on the drag. And he says, "So what'd you get?" And I said, I had to count my coils and figure it out, but I was like 3,042 or something like that. And he kind of had a big laugh in front of the whole crew. And he said, "I could be off some, kid, but I ain't going to be off that much." And he had a big hoorah laugh over it. And then we weighed those cattle the next day. We had them in a holding field. And so a friend of mine was on the scale gate. And when we were done, he said, "Did he say anything to you about the count?" He didn't talk to me at all. And he just got in the pickup and left when we were done. "Well," he said, "I counted everything that came off the scales and kept track. Your count was on the money. His was off." And I said, "Well, he was man enough to ridicule me in front of the crew, but he wasn't man enough to apologize in front of the crew. Told me a lot about that guy."
We're excited to announce our first ever She's a Hand Ranch Camp Horseback Edition. On June 14th through 16th, we'll be hosting 14 women to cultivate their cattle handling skills from horseback. We'll spend one day working in the arena, one day in the backgrounding lot, and one day gathering cattle in summer country. Attendees will provide their own horses and tack. We're accepting applications now through the form linked below. Once your application has been reviewed and accepted, you will have 48 hours to secure your spot.
So then, like, when I had on the subject of counting, when I had a crew of guys on the 10,000 head deal, when we're done making a gather, sometimes it would take days to, we just bite off a chunk of ground, and then tomorrow we're going to move over until we got it all. But some of that country was really rough and rocky and steep, and steers, all steers, and a lot of brama crosses, and there's some of them pretty wild. And so I'd ask everybody, "So did you lose any?" And everybody lost some. You can't just go get everything and abandon what you got. Sometimes somebody would say, they were in the rims and I couldn't get them. Yeah, that's okay. I mean, I'm just asking to find out what we have left. So how many did you have? I don't know, 12, 15, 20, right in there. All right. And so ask somebody else, "Did you lose any?" "Well, I saw some up on the ridge, but I just couldn't get them." "How many are you talking?" "I don't know, 10 or 20 or something like that." "What color were most of them?" You know, I didn't really pay attention. I said, "Okay, so now I don't know tomorrow whether to send one guy, are they the same cattle or aren't they? So I don't know whether to send one bot guy back to get them, or you go get the ones you lost and you get the one, two guys. I could use the whole crew tomorrow. And from now on, if you lose some, I want to know how many and what color. And if it's the same number and the same color as this other guy, it's probably the same bunch of cattle." And so we sort of made a game out of it. When we're riding along to go, before we scatter the riders, we might pull a ridge and there's a bunch of cattle in front of us. I'd say, "Okay, everybody see those cattle? Turn your back on them. So everybody here, tell me how many there are there." So on the start, of course, they're like, "Geez, I didn't know. What color?" And so we got to making a game out of it. And, you know, some guys were on it. When they saw the cattle, there's 22 head, and there's so many blacks, so many reds, and so many yellows or whatever. And I knew they were going to do that with me. So I'm riding in the lead of the group usually because I'm the leader. And we would top a hill. Even if I was in the middle of a conversation, I would count them and get their colors. And somebody else would say, okay, turn your backs on these. And I'm kind of like, oh boy. And they're trying to get me. Then I would say, when they'd ask me, I'd say, 23? And so many blacks, so many reds, and so many whites. Of course, I knew I'd try to keep going with my conversation to make them think that I wasn't counting. But it really helped a ton. And it is amazing how we all had fun with it. I mean, by the end of the summer, 20 does not look like 23 at a glance. I mean, you can hit the estimate. And so, of course, I would practice one by myself. Before I count them, I just scan them all. Like, I'm going to say, they're 28 head, you know, and there might be 32 or there might be 22. But pretty soon, it's kind of scary how you could scan them and be pretty accurate. Told me that practice really helps on that. That was a big help. So,
do you think that stockmanship is something you can learn?
I would think so. Okay. Now, I noticed this. On a crew of cowboys, you're living with them and you're eating with them and you're sleeping with them and you get to know them. But there would be people on the crew that didn't fit so good with the crew. They didn't adjust good with the crew. But I noticed these same guys were cussing their horses, cussing their dogs, and always talking about stupid cows. And I started learning that the people that could adjust in life, they could adjust with the cows too. And so there's some people that have a natural ability and some don't. They try to force other people to do what they want and they're cussing their dog. Anytime anybody says stupid cows, they're usually the sorrier element you're going to get because there's nothing stupid about a cow. At least I never seen one that was stupid. Because they outsmart those guys, they think they're stupid. But those are the ones that you learn to adjust to them. How can I handle these cattle in a way so I can get done what I need to do so they don't scan me to get away, whatever it takes. And I've been in brush country down to between San Antonio and Del Rio to start a bunch of horses, but they wanted us to help with the cattle and the horses. And I tell you what, you get on a bunch of cattle that are wild or horses in the brush country, if you stay too far back, they're going to split up and you won't see it. If you stay too close, then they constantly trying to get away. So I've learned you stay just so you can see the tails of the last ones ahead of you. And they'll probably slow down and they won't be trying to split up near as much. In Nevada, where I worked, it's common knowledge if you're ever going to hold a cowboy job very long, if you have a crew, that you don't get in front of somebody else. What I mean is the boss, he's got his men and he scatters them out. What does that mean? You probably know. And you need to stay in between the people you are let off with. And usually a good boss will say, okay, you saw the last guy I let off. Now, this guy here, I'm going to have him come down that ridge and kick any cattle to you. And if you're halfway smart about it, you will recognize, it was in the days before cell phones, what color horse this guy's got, the guy in front of you and the guy behind you. Because you can tell the color of a horse for miles. And I mean, a pinot looks way different than a bay, or a sorrel looks different than a palomino. You have that chance. That's your job, to stay between those two people. If you see somebody else, that means the guy that you're supposed to be in between is probably needing help. He's bogged down on a steep hill behind you and could sure use some help. You don't just keep riding on. You should show up at the meeting place in the same order as you were let off that morning. And you don't ride in front of somebody. You should go back and look for them if you don't see them, if you don't recognize them. And that's the way that just works. A real important deal if you want to hold a job. Useful yeah. member of a crew, that is. Now, a mom and pop deal, I see those deals where a little family deal, everybody's riding around and yelling and cussing and all that stuff. It wouldn't, they don't do that. But on a big outfit, that's real, real important.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Absolutely. So if someone's listening to this episode and they're like, I want to improve my stockmanship, what is the first step? Like just one thing they can do to start on the process?
What I would do is pick somebody on the crew that's more seasoned and tell them, I want to learn this. Anything you see that I'm doing that you would do different, please share it with me. Maybe not right on the spot. Sometimes it's just not easy. But when we get back to camp or something, what'd you see? The fact is, in the morning, I would tell them, anything you see, remember it. So tonight you can tell me, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't do this. And life's pretty short for trial and error. But a lot of high school kids, I mean, they're going to be pretty green. They're doing a lot of screwing up. And they never ask, usually. They think they're doing fine, just like I probably did when I was 14, 15. And how would you know? By screwing up. We had to handle our cattle, and it was a botch many times. Pretty soon you're thinking, golly, it's been half a day and it's a botch. So somebody just getting into it, I'd be asking somebody that knew more, because there's probably quite a bit he could mention. And sometimes it'll be a person that he's quite a bit better than everybody else, and he wants to stay that way. And so he's not going to help a young guy. But a lot of people are just the opposite. Since you asked, I wouldn't have done this today. What I saw you do, I wouldn't have done that. And usually, as far as cutting in front of somebody, handling a herd or something, most anybody's going to say, wait a minute, where are you going? Like if he cuts between the herd and him, what are you doing? Do you don't think I'm doing my job? You're going to come over and do my job? Or what I would usually tell them is, hold up, hold up. I got to talk to you. There's guys here that are going to be very unhappy with you. I don't know how you feel about getting your butt chewed, but you're about to. And you do it to me, I'm going to politely tell you, you don't do that. You don't. It's like telling somebody else, you're not doing your job, I'll do it for you. I'm just going to warn you, there's guys that won't take that. They'll figure it out if they don't listen. But I mean, I have one friend of mine, this was probably in the 60s. He was 12 years old. He was a representative for his father back in Elko country before they had fences. And everybody that's got cattle sends a rep to make sure their cows get branded with the same iron as their calves get branded with the same iron as their mother. And he said, I didn't do it, but he said, I saw a guy from Arizona walk right there holding a herd. And one guy there from Arizona just rode right between the herd and this other guy, older guy. He had his rope down anyway, kind of healing something that would be on the edge playing around. And he doubled his rope up and he took right after him and whacked him right over the back of the neck with everything he had, knocked the guy's hat off and his horse gassed it out there. And he turned around and he said, he looked like, what's the matter with you? What are you thinking? And this guy was wearing a pistol. And he said, he put his hand on the butt of his pistol. He said, let me make you a little promise. Next time you step out in front of me, I'm going to kill you. Pretty severe. My friend was 12. He said, I made darn sure I never rode in front of anybody. But I would say put yourself in a position to make mistakes. It was so good for me to work for my uncle there in Montana. I was by myself. If it didn't work, I had to figure out, gee, what am I going to do? I'm sure not going to go home and ask him to help me, you know, when he's busy with the hay crew. That was really good. The more you can be alone, the better. So that's what I'd say, the number one.
Great. I think that's a great piece of advice. Do you have anything else you want to tell us before we go into the rapid fire questions?
Can't think of it.
Okay. If you think of more, we can go after the rapid fire, but we have a handful of rapid fire questions. The first one's pretty easy. What's your favorite cut of steak and how do you like to eat it?
Rib steak rare, please.
Good option. This one's a little bit more challenging. Okay. What is an ag industry topic that you think needs talked about more often?
An ag industry topic, you say?
Yep.
Well, the people that know me know that I have been involved with wild horses, and we get a couple of holding facilities not far from where I live. And for a good number of years, I fed my family handling those horses. But I really feel that there's enough people on welfare in this country without having horses on welfare. And I think that ought to be abolished. I don't know why we are feeding horses when we could be feeding cows on the same range. And the same goes for wolves. Jeez, I can't believe our government protecting wolves. I mean, pretty soon they'll be protecting coyotes. And we, in our state, lions are protected. It's just crazy. And used to be when I first came in this country, if you had a lion problem, I mean, if a lion got your kitty on the porch or a chicken, they'd be there the next morning and we'd get him. Now they tell me that they call it, well, there's two things. One of them is one per incident. That means if two lions get into your goats or something, you can put the hounds on them and tree them. You can only get one of them. And the other one gets to come back and have fun in a couple of nights. And the other thing is they call it three strikes and you're out. So that means if they kill your baby colt on your side of the fence, and then they come over and kill some sheep on my side of the fence, and then they kill a baby calf on your side of the fence, and they come over and get into my goats on my side of the fence, that's only two per property owner. They can't touch him. They can't touch him. They got more rights than I do. What if I went over to the neighbors and butchered a steer? I'm going to jail. Not them. You got to have three on the same side of the fence. Is that bizarre or what? Anyway, the same with the wolf. Some friend of mine looked up here a little bit ago. The wolf, the same animal that we worked hard as a country to eradicate, if you harassed a wolf, that means running with your four-wheeler or snowmobile or take after him horseback or shoot over his head or anything. That's harassment. I didn't say kill. That is worth a $100,000 fine and an indeterminate jail sentence. And so the predator deal is like way out of whack.
Yeah, I think that's a great topic. Two more quick questions. What is the best piece of advice you've ever been given?
Well, ever been given to do with stockmanship?
In general.
What I told you, and it works for life too, your next responsibility after a wreck is a graceful recovery. Don't be hunting for somebody to blame it on. You can think, how did I let that happen? Just take a fresh start. Don't stew over it. Just learn by your mistakes.
I love that. Okay, this one's kind of interesting. If you were not doing what you were doing, so in the stockmanship and horsemanship world, and money wasn't an object, what is your non-career dream job?
Non-career?
Yeah.
Non-career dream job?
Yep.
You know, I've never done anything else, so I don't know anything else. My passion is working with horses, cattle, and dogs. I don't know how I don't know anything else. That's what I love. If I was getting heaven and they say, okay, this is heaven, this is paradise, I want you to fill out the blank here. How do you want it to go? I would say plenty of horses to start, lots of cattle to work, give me a good cowboys and good dogs, and keep me about 3 days behind all the time, so I got to really hump up and use my brain to catch up on this deal. And good country where it's not, where I wouldn't have to put shoes on if that's possible.
I'm sure that will happen. Absolutely.
I can't, I don't, I've never, I don't know. I draw a blank on that one.
That's okay. Your answer was great. A lot of times people say things like, I would love to be a tour guide or, go spend time with my grandkids. Or, I mean, the answers are kind of all over the board, but yours was
My
perfect.
grandkids, they're going to want to move, Kath, and ride horses. So just time with them in the living room, that'd get pretty old pretty fast. My whole family,
Absolutely.
that's about all we know. I have three kids. They're not kids. What should I call them? Offspring. And that's what they do for a living. So they don't know much else either.
Are you still doing clinics? Do you have clinics coming up? Are you still taking new customers? What does that kind of look like?
I don't ride horses for a living, but and my clinic schedule's not made yet for this year. Probably in the next month or two, my wife will get going on that, and she knows people that I was just telling her here this morning. I mean, I got people want me back to the same location. I don't know how many times I've been to Maine and Massachusetts and different ones, and I said, if people call and people, a place where I've never been and people I don't know, that's my favorite. I kind of like that. I like the cow country way more than the weekend warrior. The cow horse people seem to be way more interested because they're ranch people, because they're using their horses for a job. They pay attention to a lot more of what I say because they, I said, okay, this next maneuver is in case this happens. And they're listening a lot of times because they've had that happen. They're interested in tools they can put on their horse to help them with their work. Yeah. And but I don't do as many as I did. I mean, I used to be never home hardly. I mean, I'd say 30, five places in a year, and never seen my family for a long time. They used to all come with me when I had my kids. They could pack. We'd get seven or eight horses in a four horse trailer. Took all the dividers out, and half of them are ponies and colts and all this stuff. But then as soon as they got their driver's licenses, they don't do clinics, but they scattered out helping people start their horses all over Hawaii and Texas and Canada and Arkansas and everywhere. So they don't do that anymore. They're married, or two of them are married. One of them isn't married yet. The ones that are married have a couple of grandchildren apiece.
Yeah, that's so fun. Well, when you get your clinic schedule posted, we'll share it with this podcast. And this was great. I appreciate your time today and all the stories and knowledge that you shared.
Well, thank you. It was kind of fun. Made me do some thinking. Nobody's ever asked me about stockmanship before, but that's what's been a passion of mine, and horsemanship and dogmanship go right along with it. So it was kind of fun.
Yeah, well, we'll have you back on and you can share more stories because our audience is going to love this.
Time will tell. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thanks again for listening to the Cattleman U podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and review if you're listening on Apple Podcasts. We are thankful to have you in your community. Like always, remember, the grass is greener where you water it.